Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, what a time to be alive. Live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. What a day yesterday. I got the Dodgers when I got home in a crazy game I'll get to in 5 minutes, and a remarkable moment in the history of the Dodgers, and they've had many. I got two great NBA games last night. NBA, got to give them credit. They gave me the Bucks, the Nets, the Lakers, and the Warriors. I was glued to all of them. Joy Taylor is joining me. I got to tell you, I have almost goosebumps off. I was driving to work this morning, and I'm like, is that one of the great random Tuesday nights in sports?
It was fabulous. Oh. I was literally sitting on my couch thinking, you know, we all complain about having to adult. But I'm sitting on my couch. I'm on my third game of the day with a nice bowl of popcorn. And I've sprinkled some truffle salt on it and a glass of champagne. I'm like, I don't know the life gets better than this.
It doesn't.
Think it does.
So I'll start with the Lakers. Let me just start with this. And they're one of a handful of, you know, there's about five teams every year in the NBA that can win a championship. So their season started last night. NBA got off to a great start. So there's two things, though, you can't change during an NBA season. Age, the Lakers are really old. There's no fountain of youth here, folks. And salaries. They're really expensive at the top. Westbrook, LeBron, AD. Translation, it's a pretty thin team. Their flaws are their flaws, and you're going to have to live with them. Now, they played the Warriors last night. The Warriors are different. They've got a lot of evolving to do. The Warriors could end up being a very interesting team. They won last night, and Klay Thompson didn't play. James Wiseman is working himself back from an injury. They added a guy named Bielitsa from the Sacramento Kings, who's an interesting fit, maybe their best player off the bench. They're an interesting team. That's an interesting team, and they could be a different team, the Warriors, in 3 months. Keep your eye on the Warriors. The Lakers, they'll be good, but this is what they are. Going to be highly dependent on LeBron and AD to be great and be healthy. The Lakers are so old, even their bench is old. Usually in the NBA, your bench on a really good team is a bunch of young guys that want to develop into something. The Lakers bench is old guys who aren't good enough to start. It's Rondo, it's Dwight Howard, it's Carmelo Anthony. And the NBA has become, as you all know, in the last 10 years, very much a spacing league. What does that mean? Everybody can handle the ball. Everybody can shoot. Right? Everybody can shoot. So you spread it. It used to be everybody was jammed in the paint. Drop the ball to the big guy. Double team him. Pop it out. Shoot. Everything is spaced. So the Lakers do not have a lot of young athletic legs to chase three-point shooters off the line. This is an old team. Their bench is old. Their bench is older than their starters. And their starters are old. And so, whereas the Warriors, Steph didn't play well, Klay didn't play, and they won. The Lakers, actually, their stars, you know, I mean, AD and LeBron were pretty good at home, and they lost. And we can blame Westbrook for this, but let's be fair about Westbrook. He was brought in for energy in minutes. Yeah, he couldn't shoot last night. Folks, it's been 10 years. He's not a shooter. He can score. He's not a shooter. So LeBron, as the Lakers lost last night, this is his team. LeBron is never like young players. He likes his guys, and he's got a lot of them. He's got Melo and Westbrook and AD, and they're really, really old. And in a spacing league, the Lakers are going to have to win with depth of power and size and length and slow it down. And they can do that against a lot of teams. I don't know if you can win a championship that way, but that's what the Lakers have to be. This is what they are. Old, expensive, and limited athletically on the perimeter. But LeBron James said last night, don't blame Westbrook. He's the new guy. It's going to be a hard fit. He didn't have a great night. We don't expect him to be a great shooter. At least LeBron had a little bit of context after the game.
told Russ to go home and watch a comedy. You know, something that could put a smile on his face. So hard on himself. I told him, don't be so hard on yourself. It's one game. I mean, it's just, you know, challenging to get into a new system and trying to fit in, but also bring what you bring to the table at a high level to fit out as well. And, you know, if it's three guys on this team that should be worrying about not fitting in, it's probably myself, AD, and Russ.
They are what they are, and they'll be fine, but don't expect big variations of what they are. They're old and they're expensive, and that's not going to change. All right, I want to talk baseball for about 5 minutes. Baseball is a long, long season. Spring training, regular season, postseason. You can play 200 games if you win the World Series. But it always comes down to a moment or three. The Dodger season came down to a moment. Cody Bellinger, if you made a movie about baseball, you'd put Cody Bellinger in it. He looks like a young Kevin Costner. He's tall, he's athletic, he's rangy. He was the Rookie of the Year in 2017. He was the MVP in 2019. But this is what baseball does. It gets in your head. Golf does the same thing. Hockey's moving fast. Football's moving fast. Soccer's moving fast. Most sports are constant activity. Golf and baseball are different. You got a lot of downtime. And Cody Bellinger this year got lost. He couldn't hit. He was the second worst hitter in baseball. Thank God he can play defense. Now, he's a home run hitter, so you don't have him on a roster for average. But he was at like 127 at one point. Statistically, the second worst hitter in baseball. And after he was an MVP, he changed his stance. Golfers do that a lot too. And it can really screw with you. And it screwed with Cody Bellinger, or as they call him, Belly. And then the playoffs started, and the Dodgers needed him because Max Muncy was hurt. And there's been a lot of injuries, and the two, three guys they need to be good are like Max Scherzer, Mookie Betts, and Cody Bellinger. And a one-game playoff against St. Louis, he delivered. In a five-game series against San Francisco, Cody delivered again. And then comes the Braves series, and the Dodgers have two heartbreaking road losses. And after a disastrous fourth inning where Walker Buehler could not get a break, they got a couple of runners on in the eighth, and here came Bellinger, and this is the way baseball is. All is forgotten if one, two, or three moments in a season go your way. And this one right here did.
Got a pitch to Bellinger. And a fly ball to right center field. It's well hit, and it is gone. A three-run home run for Bellinger. We've got a new game. It's tied at five on a 1-2 pitch. Bellinger hits it out.
Unbelievable baseball moment. And then, as the game was tied, they needed, you know, Mookie Betts to do something, and he did because he's Mookie Betts. I find it amazing. The Braves cannot get him out. It should be noted, in a game against the San Francisco Giants, he went 4-for-4. They struggled to get him out, too. Arguably the sport's very best player and best leader. Winning run. The Dodgers now were trapped. The season was lost, and now it's saved. And the Braves feel a little trapped because today at 5 Pacific, they have to start bullpen only starters. And the Braves have a good bullpen. It's not very deep. So the Braves may do just fine today until about the fifth or sixth, but then watch out. But the story today is Cody Bellinger, a great talent who changed his stance, was lost in the season, regained it in a one-game playoff against St. Louis, added to it with the Giants, and last night hit the home run of the season for one of sports' great franchises, Dave Roberts, afterwards.
And it's just hard to imagine a bigger hit that I can remember, really. Just kind of what was at stake. We were dead in the water. You could see it, and Luke's coming at throwing 97 miles an hour, and you get a squibber, you get AJ riding a base hit up the middle to get behind the count. And to hit a homer, it just flipped everything.
What is remarkable is some Dodger fans left, and I'm not going to lie. It did feel like the season was over. This wasn't one of these losses where you're like, hey, we just need a base runner. Nothing worked. When Walker Buehler's struggling to get out of the fourth, every little hit got through. The Dodgers couldn't get a break. Charlie Morton did what he always seemingly does in big spots. He handcuffed the Dodgers. But the good news was, eighth inning, here came the Dodgers' best hitters in the lineup. The Braves now going deeper into the bullpen, and voila, you saw it. So it's now a 2-1 Braves lead. They go to the bullpen for all their activity tonight. I would give the Dodgers a big edge tonight. It was so magical. It was so incredible. Just one of those great baseball moments that goes down in the history, the lore of a franchise. That is the biggest Dodger hit in a long time. And that's from a team that won the World Series last year.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
We're only a third through the NFL season, so it's easy to get fooled and think teams that have kind of a glossy record are better than they are, or think a team like the Colts scrapping it together are done for the season. You can get fooled easily. So Baker Mayfield, it was announced today, will not start for Cleveland tomorrow. Instead, his backup, very capable Case Keenum. In fact, when Baker came into this league, I said his comp is Case Keenum. He's Case Keenum, better arm. The line did not move dramatically when it was announced today. The Browns were about a 3-point favorite. Now they'll be a 1 to 1.5-point favorite. Baker's better than Case, but we're not talking Mahomes and Case Keenum here, which is probably a 7, 8, 9 game point swing. So this is the right move by Cleveland for two reasons. Number one is these seasons are long. If you look in division, Pittsburgh's not good enough offensively to make the playoffs. Cincinnati's got a nice record, but they don't have a ton of depth. They will not be able to overcome key injuries, which all teams deal with. I mean, Cleveland's got a boatload of injuries. They're still favored tomorrow. So I think over the course of a season, Cincinnati, still in a rebuild, is really not built to be a playoff team for 17 games. They can get 6-7 games in. They have a young quarterback, terrific receivers. They're kind of clever offensively. They're playing better defensively. Bottom line is, Cleveland's roster is a playoff roster. They may not be Baltimore. I don't think they are. But they're a playoff roster. Why risk it by playing Baker Mayfield? Again, this is not a division. Like, if you're Kansas City, you can't screw around too long. Chargers are good, and the Raiders can score a lot of points. It's not this division. All right? This division is built now for Cleveland to get to the playoffs. So that's number one. There's no rush. Number two is if you look at the current schedule for the Cleveland Browns, they're still favored with Case Keenum tomorrow night, and I do think they'll win. It was one of my better bets on the board. I like Cleveland. But start looking at it. Next week, they host Pittsburgh. If Baker comes back healthy, they're favored. At Cincinnati, with Baker, they'd be favored. At New England, rookie quarterback, they'd be favored. Detroit, they'd be favored. The next time they're not favored, week 12 at Baltimore, and with or without Baker Mayfield, you're probably not going to win that football game. This is the right move as we've extended this season for this division and this roster. They've got mostly the same chance to make it work with Case as they do with Baker. Baker's better. The gap is not the Grand Canyon. But why risk an injury in that division with your roster? It makes absolutely no sense. I think they're making the right move, and I still think Cleveland wins.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. Think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Bills lost to the Titans, the underreported part of that game was this. Ryan Tannehill was more comfortable. The Bills never sacked him, and the Bills have a great deep defensive line. They never sacked him. Being comfortable almost always wins for quarterbacks in the NFL. Whatever quarterback is more comfortable, less pressure, almost always wins the games. And in the NBA, we don't talk about this a lot, but teams that make you uncomfortable, the Lakers a couple years ago in the bubble, the Raptors a couple years ago when they had all those defenders in Kawhi, the Milwaukee Bucks. The problem with Brooklyn is they don't make anybody uncomfortable because the whole roster is offensive, guys. They've all made their money on offense. Patty Mills, Joe Harris, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge have all made their money because they were prodigious or profound scorers. What's that mean? They don't get in your face. And the other issue, and Milwaukee, by the way, has a lot of people. Giannis has made his money on defense. Brooke Lopez can defend. Drew Holiday can defend. A lot of the Bucks players who can score, everybody in this league can score, have made their money. And this was a lot about the San Antonio Spurs. Remember their dynasty? A lot of that was Bruce Bowen made his money defensively. Duncan was a great offensive player, but he made a lot of his money defensively. And so this is the architecture of Brooklyn. All the dudes have made their cash. They've made their lettuce on scoring. And so there was and what happens is when you have such great offensive players, this is the danger of having, you know, a Kobe and Shaq play together in their prime, is you have to be careful or you got a bunch of guys sitting around watching Shaq and Kobe scoring. You lose your energy very quickly because you become a very passive team. You, like the fans, you just sit and watch Matt, you sit and watch KD and Harden put on a show because they're so brilliant. Same with Kyrie. By the way, Kyrie's not there. He's also, if he comes back, a terrible defensive player. And so what you saw last night with this team was a very low energy level. So Milwaukee, because they're built from the defense to the offense, energy is part of their DNA. Passion, getting loose balls, winning the battle in the paint, getting rebounds. They dominated all those stats last night. So when you get a team that's got sort of a defensive DNA with enough offense, those are hard to beat. Brooklyn, all their money comes from offense. Nobody's been a great defensive player, and you saw it last night. But the real stat that jumped out to me is that, like points on the fast break, Milwaukee had 22, Brooklyn had 2. Why? It was a lack of hustle, a lack of energy. Because, again, great offensive players, the team tends to become viewers and spectators. There's not a lot of passion. There's not a lot of energy. Milwaukee gives you energy every night. Their star Giannis takes no minutes off. And you saw it last night. Steve Nash even talked about this after the game.
The one thing that disappointed me more than anything was just loose balls, hustle plays. You know, they seem to win them all. So as we're trying to find ourselves and explore different rotations and find that cohesion, we gotta make it more uncomfortable for people.
And they don't. And it's not a finger-pointing expedition here. It is a matter of when you have elite offensive players who Harden can dribble the air out of the ball, you kind of sit back and Kyrie can dribble the air out of the ball. You kind of sit and find yourself watching it. You become a very passive spectator. And I thought Brooklyn played with no energy early, fell into a huge hole, ignited some energy, but then came back late and didn't have enough, and the game is over. By the way, this is why guys like Klay Thompson of the Warriors are so valuable. He's a very good defensive player, but he's a catch-and-shoot guy. He doesn't dribble the air out of the ball. When Klay scores, it's grab-it-shoot. He plays with it. So you don't – catch-and-shoot guys are really valuable. You don't end up just watching them. Watch Harden in the wings. Sit there, watch. Put your shoulders down. You relax a little bit. You become a spectator. You never do with catch and shoot guys. They're moving around. You get them the ball. They shoot. They score. They go back on defense. So, Brooklyn to me last night, it's. I don't think they're built to beat this team. I think Milwaukee is built for a long, extended physical series, and I think Brooklyn's built for great quarters, halves, and nights. I don't think they're built to go toe-to-toe. If this was a fight, you got a finesse fighter, you got a guy who can do finesse but can also get physical, I'll take that fighter.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, let's get Clad in here. I got, by the way, I packed my own fake ID because he loves them so much. I hope he loves me as much as Iowa because he treats them with such kit gloves. Oh. Okay.
Well, can we stop for just a second?
What?
I'm sorry, Joy, you're getting roped into this. You are both so wrong on the Dodger fan take. So wrong.
Because I leave in the seventh.
You don't leave a playoff game early.
You know what?
It was a three-run game. That you just don't do that. You don't do that.
Oh.
By the way, great baseball fans do not bring beach balls and bat them around the stands. Great baseball fans don't do the wave. All that happens at Dodger Stadium.
Are you calling Dodgers fans bad baseball fans?
1,000% yes.
You know you're in Los Angeles, right?
I do know I'm in Los Angeles.
Mm. You're down in Orange County. Yeah, you're around Angel fans.
Yeah, the best baseball fans. I covered, so before I got here, I would do a pre- and post-game show for the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah.
Not a great team, but we would travel around and go to all the different stadiums. St. Louis, great baseball fans. Knowledgeable baseball
fans.
Nothing
else to do there.
And San Francisco. Those are the two best baseball fan bases that I ever saw live in the stadium. Dodger fans
Let me ask you something, Joel.
They can be passionate LA fans, but then they're going to just like, they're going to leave early. They're going
to
do all this
stuff. If you go
to
a movie, right, and 15 minutes into the movie, it's terrible. Do you stay there out of principle because it's your favorite actor, or do you leave?
Boom, I'm out. By the way, let me ask you. So baseball is mostly played in the summer. The hell is she going to do in St. Louis in the summer? Joe Buck won't even leave his house.
See, now
so
you're
hot.
Just ripping on whole regions. Folks,
no.
America, this is why I come on the show, to represent you. I am representing
okay.
you.
So first of all, I want to address a couple things here. These coaches, I defend coaches. I am about freedom. But, you know, these athletic directors, they hire you, and then by the second year, if you lose a conference game, they're on the phone with Jimmy Sexton. Hey, who's your next hot coach?
Yeah.
So I defend these coaches when they look for work. But I will tell you this. Jimbo Fisher may have done the best press conference I've ever seen. They asked him about the LSU job. Roll the tape on Jimbo. This is how you do it.
We're building something. We're recruiting great players. I really believe we're on the process of building something great. My family has roots here. I got ranches here. I hunt here. I love everything about this place. There's nothing going on there. There's nothing happening there. And I don't be disrespectful to anybody else. I coached there. It was a great place. We won national championships. It is one of the best, best places. It's a wonderful place.
I believe him. That's how you do it. I didn't need to know about his ranches, but I love it nonetheless. I believe him. I believe him. That's how you should do it.
I mean, he said virtually the same thing. Listen, I thought he handled that really well. That's what I would want to hear if I was an Aggie fan. That's what I would want to hear.
What do you mean?
If I was an Aggie booster.
He said the same. What, you think he's leaving?
He said the same thing at Florida State.
Not like that.
Well, maybe not about his ranches, but it was very similar. I don't believe any coach when they say, I'm going to stay, because it just sets you up for disappointment. I don't know if he's going to stay or not. He's got a great contract. They've paid him as well as anybody in the sport. He is building something very good there.
Just beat Bama.
They just beat Alabama. Maybe they can build on that. Obviously, if their quarterback would have stayed healthy, maybe this would have been a different season for them because of that building. That everything he's saying is right. And this is not against Jimbo. I'm not saying Jimbo specifically, I don't believe him. I'm just saying I don't believe any coach ever. I didn't believe Nick Saban when he said, I'm going to stay in Miami, or when he was going to stay in LSU, or when he was going to stay at Michigan State, or when Mel Tucker said he was going to stay at Colorado, or so on and so forth. Todd Graham at Pittsburgh. I mean, it's just, this is the nature of the beast. This, don't believe coaches. Fans out there, do not believe coaches. Whatever they say, they will go to the best possible situation for them. And that's not that we shouldn't begrudge them that opportunity, but don't believe them.
Okay.
What he says at that podium doesn't make any difference whatsoever.
Okay, now I want to talk to America.
Okay, let's see it. Let's hear
America,
it.
America, Jimbo Fisher is not taking the LSU job.
Yeah, maybe not.
I promise it. Now,
are you
100%? He's not 100%.
Okay.
I believe him.
You know what? I hope he doesn't, because I like what he's building at Texas A&M. But you're not going to back me into saying, like, well, absolutely, that press conference, that sold me. Just like the one he gave in Tallahassee.
Well, you and I are just to agree to disagree. All right. So I got a couple things I want to get into. You have the Northwestern Michigan game Saturday.
This week, yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now. Look ahead game for Michigan. They got
could be.
I think Northwestern, watch Michigan play lousy and give Northwestern a shot to win it. I don't think they will, but this has look ahead all written all over it.
Well, a couple of factors to what you're talking about. One is the fact that Michigan doesn't have the explosiveness on offense to really blow teams out, or they haven't displayed that really. They will grind you into potentially a two-possession win like they did against Washington early in the season,
yeah.
like they did against Wisconsin. But it's not like they're just going to overwhelm you and blow you away with explosiveness on the offensive side. When they lost Ronnie Bell, their best wide receiver early in the season, the first game of the season, they lost that ability to overwhelm you with explosive plays. And then you face a team like Northwestern who's inherently gritty and inherently wants to get into one of those phone booth, muddy, disgusting style of games. Pat Fitzgerald, we want to show our toughness too. So I don't think that you're wrong. I don't think that anybody should be shocked if this is a fairly close game deep into the second half. And the look ahead is real because Michigan State is off. They're already looking at Michigan. So the entire conversation up there in that whole region is about next week. And I think this is going to be one of Jim Harbaugh's most difficult weeks to prepare yep. his team is to try to get them to look at Northwestern and not look ahead to Mel Tucker's Spartans.
Okay, let me just say this because I didn't understand the media. I don't even consider myself part of the media. Unfortunately, I'm connected to it. But
unfortunately, he says.
So, okay. you media people, when Mel Tucker got hired.
Are you saying I'm part of this?
You are
I just
media.
Want to know. Am I being lumped in
Look at
in
your
or
hair.
Not?
You look like the media.
My hair
it's
is
perfect.
It's I mean, good
he's got
today,
perfect hair.
Thank
perfect
you.
Skin. It's, discouraging. So, the point
Joy's
being,
mad about the Dodger
yeah,
tie.
Look
I look
at her
over
too.
At
perfect
her normally
skin.
For support in this chair. I look over for support, and she's just looking at me with disdain
today. I don't know
today.
What's happening. Where are we going with this?
You guys look like TV people. I look like a UPS driver who stumbled into a microphone.
You're not Skye Bannister today.
Okay, so the point is, when Mel Tucker got hired, I was like, this is going to be a home run. And the media, the response was so lukewarm, and I'm like, presence, can build a staff, a man's man, kids love him, dad's going to think he's cool. Shocker, he's hitting it out of the park. Now, here's the thing. He's going to get offered the LSU job. He is. Because Franklin wants the USC job. Heard it here second. Luke Fickle may be in line for the USC job. But Mel Tucker's going to get the call.
Well, Mel has SEC ties, right?
Okay, I mean,
this is where his nature is.
Okay,
he cut
do
his
you think
teeth
he
under Saban, and then he was with Kirby at Georgia. So there's a lot there. There is a lot there.
I would hire him. That would be my choice.
Mel has done a great job this year, and he did it in a year in which no one really expected Michigan State to be good because they had to do this with really, string and bandages, if you will. Lots of transfers.
Tons.
Kenneth Walker is one of those transfers. Gets there in December. He's the nation's leading rusher.
Yeah.
But it's that toughness and presence that you're talking about that was starting to help Colorado become a tougher team.
Thank you.
And then he goes to Michigan State. He's done that there. He certainly has that. The only thing that I would throw at you is we haven't seen him really win as a head coach. He's doing it now, and we'll see how this November winds up. Remember, they still have to play Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State. So this 7-0 right now could turn into something very great. It could turn into something very different by the end of the year.
They're going to beat Michigan.
Potentially. I think that's going to be a phenomenal game. By the way, Gus Ginny and I will also be in East Lansing next week, so we'll have that Michigan-Michigan State game, and I can't wait for that one.
That's going to be one of the five best college games of the year.
I hope so, and I think it's – and also it's got the vitriol
Where's
of
it
the
at
local
this year?
That's in East Lansing, so it'll be in Spartan Stadium.
Upset City, baby.
I tell you, it's – well, I don't know what the line is going to be. Upset – I mean, would you say Michigan State would be an upset in that one? I have no idea.
I think Michigan State will win.
I think that would be a coin flip. From Vegas, probably. Maybe a 2-point favorite for Michigan. We'll see what happens with Michigan this week. Back to your original premise, though. I agree. Tucker is going to get a hard run from LSU. A hard run.
Let me ask you, Klatt. Michigan State's a fine program. Geographical footprint. They can't build a roster to win a national title. Saban was winning 7 games a year. In the end, LSU calls. You are the...
Well, LSU's a far better job
than
Michigan
but that
State.
Doesn't mean you always take it.
That doesn't mean you always take it. Now, it would be the second time Michigan State lost a head coach to LSU because Nick Saban went from Michigan State to LSU. By the way, quick aside, the two GAs on that Michigan State staff for Nick Saban were Adam Gase and Josh McDaniels, which is a fascinating deal when you look at like young coaches and where they ended up being. Now, having said that, LSU is the better job. It's a great job. It's a top 3, 4, 5 job in all of college football. They have resources. They have the footprint to recruit.
Passion.
And they've had success over different staff. So the last 3 head coaches have won national championships.
Yeah.
The only thing that you have to get over, and I've thrown this out on social media, and the LSU fans cannot stand this truth, is that, yes, the last three coaches have won national championships. The last two have been run out of town.
Yeah.
So if you're not winning at that national championship level, it's and that, but that's it.
That's life.
What it is. That's life, in particular in the SEC East and in particular at that location. The LSU job is a great job, and it's far better than Michigan State. And whether he takes it or not, I have no idea.
Okay. Listen, I'm going to make this brief. I don't want you to go down some rabbit hole talking
Josh
Hawkeye
and
football.
Adam Gase.
Okay.
You're going to get in on Iowa.
Once again, I'm not going to – listen, not going to make fun of Iowa. This is something you media guys do that drives me crazy.
Okay.
You feel an obligation. Well, they haven't lost any games. They're number two in America.
Wrong.
Alabama
would a bad take.
Thump Cincinnati. They'd thump Iowa. Alabama's two, Georgia's one.
There has to be some combination of what you've earned and what the eye test is, right? We can't just go by Vegas odds.
Well, my eye test said Iowa's slow.
Yeah.
They're not the number two team in the country.
And they were operating on very small margins. That's the problem with a team like Iowa or even like Michigan this year or even Oklahoma State.
Two.
Because they earned it. They beat Iowa State on the road. They beat Indiana. They beat Penn State in that game that was a ridiculously good game. I mean, they had the wins to put themselves up there.
Boy.
Being ranked number two doesn't automatically mean that we think you're the second best team in the country.
What does it mean?
It means that you've earned your right to be there.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Why not?
Well,
it can't just be Vegas, because then it's all just about the stars. It's just all about the recruiting rankings. You've got to at least allow the games to matter, and the Penn State game has to matter the previous week. The fact remains is that Purdue always had success against Iowa. They beat them last year 24-20. David Bell had 190 yards 2 years ago, 130 yards last year, now 200 yards this year. They struggle specifically with Brohm's offense. If you would have let me go to it, I was going to give you the almost upset special of Purdue last week, but that's all right. I gave some other people online.
Way,
you're welcome.
I like how he says, you know, they struggle with it. You know what Iowa struggles with? Teams with speed.
And then, like I said, they operate in the margins, in small margins. And when they got into the kind of the scoring area inside the 40, they turned the ball over, and they can't do that.
I mean,
that we just have to be like, we don't think you're any good, so even if you win games, we're not going to put you up there. Alabama. It's elitist.
I have already acknowledged I'm an elitist. So my dad was an optometrist. My eye test is very, very dependable. That doesn't look like...
Yeah, but your dad being an optometrist doesn't make your vision good.
Almost always. If you go in the history of optometrist children.
That's it? Really? I didn't know that.
Live on carrots and have great vision.
I didn't know that.
Let me think. I got a couple things here. I have to manage you because you go off on these crazy rants. Let me see what I can... Okay, here's one.
I call them avenues of truth.
So, second time I've lost money, that's not important, bet Sark, and at the end of a game, he hemorrhages leads. Now, again, I've always said this. You can lose. If you start losing the same way...
It's a problem.
Okay. I saw a little bit of this at USC, where lead and evaporates. What's going on with Sark in Texas? Because I watch them for three quarters against Oklahoma, and I'm like, better team, and then they're a disaster late. Is it just depth and lack thereof?
If I knew, I'd make a lot more money because I'd go fix it. I don't know. They've got a good running game and a great running back, and yet they cannot run the ball late. 1 yard they gained. 1 yard in the fourth quarter.
I know
it. So it wasn't just a defensive collapse. It was an offensive collapse as well. It was very, very strange. And the strategy from the defense, and this ultimately goes, I know he calls the offense, Steve Sarkisian, but when your defensive coordinator, in the last 4 minutes of the game, when you desperately need... You've got timeouts left, and you desperately need to stop them in that set of downs. They've had a one-point lead. It's 25-24, and Oklahoma State has the ball. And, I mean, you're desperate for stops. You're calling timeouts so that you can get the ball back. They played cover two against a team that was definitely going to run the ball. Just so you know, folks, if you put two high safeties back, they can block everybody in the run front. It's crazy. And so all of a sudden, they just run for a first down, then they have to let them score. I didn't know what was going on. And ultimately, that falls on the head coach. You've got to click over on the headset and say, hey, get down low, stop the run, something, because that defensive scheme that they were trying to run late was terrible.
Okay, let's give me Clapp's top 10, and then I have one more thing I want to talk about with you, because I need to hold America's college football voices accountable.
Okay.
This is when you come on the show, none of this sideways stuff. All right, give me Clapp's top 10.
There it
is. Oh, okay, now finally we got a grown-up. Cincinnati's not number two. They're not three either, but whatever.
Well, I moved to Oklahoma, one, because the change in quarterback makes them a totally different team.
I agree. So I would go Georgia 1, Bama 2.
Why is Bama 2? They played a one-possession game against Florida. They lost at Texas A&M.
Well, because I don't know.
There are clearly holes with Alabama, and you're just like anointing them number 2?
First of all, this is not their best
defense.
They
probably should have beat Florida. Or excuse me, Florida probably should have beat them in the swamp.
I don't think losing in Gainesville to Dan Mullen's a crime.
Oh, but beating Penn State is a crime, and I got to move you down because my dad's an optometrist.
Hey, Georgia has 11 NFL players on defense, I swear to God.
That's a great stat? You ready for this? Did I tell you last week?
No.
Georgia's defense alone, on their 2-deep, have 9 five-star players that were recruited as 5-star players. That's a lot, right? Do you know how many 5-star players are in the entire Pac-12 right now that were recruited at any moment as a 5-star?
6.
9. Georgia's defense, 9. Entire Pac-12, 9.
Yeah, Georgia.
That's a problem.
I'd rooting for Georgia. I like Georgia.
Yeah, because you're a front runner. You're an elitist. You see the 5 stars, and you're like, eye test, dad's an optometrist, they're number 1, I'm a fan.
Hey, I don't apologize for my elitism.
Clearly, because you're going to leave a Dodger game early.
I may leave in the 4th inning if you're not up to standards. Okay, so one more thing. Let me support something. Now, people are going to be very surprised by this. But LSU has an opening and USC has an opening.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this.
Great openings.
I would rather have the USC job, but that's because I like the beach. I'll say this. LSU is a better job. Why?
They're different.
Because LSU cares more about it. And I'm nothing against USC. But, you know, this is a Pac-12. They want all the teams to be good. The one thing I appreciate about these crazy SEC programs is I don't care about anything other than winning in football. If you tell me I walk into an athletic department, I like that. I want the pressure on me.
There are two lines of thought here. You have a little more runway at USC because of that. Like I said, 3 coaches win national
championships. They'll give you an extra year or two.
They'll give you an extra 5. Yeah. Shoot. I mean, look at what we just had. But at LSU, while the recruiting's amazing, you can't open up your back door and get a number 1 class in the country. You can at USC. You don't have to go anywhere to pull a number 1 class in the country. And if you just start retaining some of those players, I think that you are within a playoff berth within 3 years automatically. Now, to be fair, LSU is in that same boat. I just think that you have to go out and compete a little bit more in that footprint, the SEC footprint, rather than just your backyard.
Well, and also you have to face Saban.
And Jimbo Fisher, who apparently you
Dan
think
Mullen.
Is, and you're about to have to
hey,
face.
How about that guy Kentucky?
Mark Stoops.
Boom.
You've got to face Kirby Smart in Georgia. You've got to now all Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma are coming down the track where you don't have that competition.
Lane Kiffin.
At USC, all you've got to do is be competent, and you're the best team
in the league. That's a good
and
point.
And all of a sudden, you can make a huge run at LSU. That's not guaranteed.
No.
I'm not saying it's a bad job.
No.
You hear what I'm saying, though, right?
No,
like, that's USC is a different deal.
I'm going to end it here because you, after 15 minutes, you finally won an argument. So I feel as a guest to the show.
Well, my dad's a psychiatrist, so you just give me some time. He's not.
That's a really good point. I don't have to – the Pac-12, I don't have to face Saban and Mullen. And by the way,
and get fired if I don't beat them.
I'll tell you, that's a strong point. I wouldn't talk until you're on the air Saturday. I would just stay with that. That's so good. I would just hide for 4 days and then start talking for the game.
That's amazing.
All right.
That's
clap.
Amazing.
Say hi to Freddie Couples.
Listen, I'm sorry, Joy. I'm sorry that you're so disappointed in me.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I do this thing. I've always called it the Super Bowl bubble. And I always, and it's just so odd that every time I do it, there's always 8 teams that I believe really are favorites to win the Super Bowl. And this morning was a prime example. I don't think there's anybody else in the Super Bowl bubble. So this morning I said to the staff, I said, we're going to do some baseball today. We're going to do a lot of NBA today. We'll do more football tomorrow. Baker not going to play for the Browns. Friday we'll do tons of football. But I said, let's just do a Super Bowl bubble today. And I swear to God, I didn't know how many teams would be in it, but this is my Super Bowl bubble as of today, and this is it. I think Dallas, Green Bay, the Rams, Arizona, four teams from the NFC, and then five teams, Tampa, and then three teams from the AFC, Kansas City, Buffalo, and Baltimore. You know, the Colts have played four good teams. They've lost all of them. Tennessee, I think, has a certain way they can play. I don't love them from behind. They're not in it. San Francisco, I think it would probably be the closest, but I just don't trust their quarterback space. They got a kid that's not ready to play and a guy that can't stay healthy. I would probably have Seattle would be my one team on the periphery, but Russell Wilson's out. So, and I just don't feel this way about Cleveland. Their defense has been disappointing. It's been very bad on third down. Offensively, they're not quite as good as I thought. Cleveland's not as good as I thought. They're just not. I can't, there's no other way to say it. I don't think the Chargers are good enough defensively through the middle. I think you can run on the Chargers. Cleveland ran on the Chargers. Baltimore ran on the Chargers. Some of the better teams in the NFL are going to just run the ball down your throat, and I don't think the Chargers are – I think the Chargers need another free agency period and another draft, and they're not paying Justin Herbert anything for two or three years, so they can go pay for it and get better on the defensive front and on their interior.